Okay, so welcome to our first class on marriages in the Torah. And this one's a little different than the rest. Because Adam and Eve are hard to describe as a marriage in the classic sense. Both in how they meet and in their relationship. Their relationship is not discussed in much detail, right? There's not a lot of interaction we see between them. They more represent the model of masculinity and femininity, and they represent the male-female relationship as a whole. So what we're going to be doing today is looking at their creation and looking at their beginnings, and the beginnings of the creation of male and female, and the way that Torah describes it and what that teaches about the male-female dynamic. In the next classes, we'll get more into nitty-gritty. You have Avram and Sarah, you have a lot of interactions. You have Yitzchak and Rivka, you have a lot of interactions. But Adam and Eve have very few interactions. So that's why this class will be a little bit different in that sense, that we won't be analyzing their interplay as much as we will in future classes. Just as a... Okay. So right from the beginning, on page 9, the Torah tells us that we're in the sixth day of creation, the creation of people. I'll do it Hebrew, then in English, starting from the top, Chavav, and then 26. Vayomer Elohim na'ase Adam etzalmeni kitmuteni, vayirdu bedgat hayam, uvav hashemayim, vavahema, imechol ha'aretz, uvechol ha'remes, ha'remes ha'aretz, vayivar Elohim et ha'adam, betzalmo, betzalem Elohim bara otel, zachar nekeva bara otam. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. They shall rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and over the animal, the whole earth, and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created man in his image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. So right from the beginning we're told, in the creation of humankind, that we are created male and female. Right? Now there's one major question on this. What's the major question?
So it said Adam.
Right.
And then it says male and female, Zachar v'Nekeva.
Okay, so...
Zachar v'Nekeva.
Right, so if we...
We divided Adam into Zachar and Nekeva.
Okay, so we'll have to understand what this means, because it seems that, and we'll see later that it's clearly the case, that first God creates Adam, just Adam. And yet, Hashem says when creating people, Hashem says he's creating male and female. But female hasn't been created yet, from our understanding, right? Female's not going to be created until later when Adam gets lonely, and we'll get into that story in a second. So why is it, how is it, that in the creation of humankind, it's mentioned male and female, that doesn't seem to be accurate. Female wasn't created yet. So Rashi asked this question, and gives two answers. So if you look at Rashi here, so Rashi is Lahalanu Omer Vaykecha Acham Yitzal Tav. So wait a second, Eve is not created till later, till we take one of Adam's ribs and create females. So how could it be that Adam, male and female, were created? So the first answer, Midrash Agada Shibar Tzne Partziv Mebriya Rishona Barachakach Chalko. So one answer the Midrash gives is that Adam was neither male nor female. It doesn't say Adam is male. It doesn't say that at all. Just Adam was created. Adam is a person. But who's to say it's female or male?
Right.
It's both.
Mm-hmm.
Or neither, however you want to describe it. Adam is male and female. And originally, maybe the plan is, and we'll get to later what Hashem's plan was in all of this, but maybe Hashem creates Adam as both male and female, and then separates that into two different entities. Okay, so that's one possibility of what happened. So this is complete. The one way of looking at this pasuk is completely accurate. God created male and female from the beginning, and that male and female was called Adam. But Adam found it lonely to just be by himself, and to be asexual and create from himself, or herself, or itself, whatever you want to say, and therefore was split into two because life is a lot more interesting when male and female are separate and they can come together as one. Okay, so that's one answer he gives. The second one is Upshuto Shamikra, but the simple way of reading the text, Kan Diachad Shinivrushnean Bishishi, Velo Perish Lechaketzad Briasan. Or, you know, that's kind of getting fancy. If you want to get simple, the simple way for understanding is that ultimately Eve is also created in the same day. All this happens in one day. Adam's created, he gets lonely, Eve is created. So the way of not being so fancy here is just to say that Adam and Eve were created in the first day, without getting into details of how that came to be. And then later, in the second chapter of Bereishit, the Torah will get into the details of how that came to be. So one is the boring answer, one is the more interesting answer. Even with the boring answer, though, we could say we might be able to read into this. Because one question we have to ask ourselves as we get to the next story is, what was God's plan going into this? Okay? Let's say Adam was just born male, and then female came afterwards. So why would God just create Adam? So let's get to the second story. Any questions in this before we... Yeah?
Where does Lilith come in?
Lilith is not mentioned. There's no Lilith in this story.
But there are in the Midrash.
I'm not so familiar with Lilith. I don't know much about it.
Supposedly she was Adam's first wife.
I'm not sure of. The Torah's account, it doesn't seem to be any Lilith in the story. Okay.
So I don't know the Hebrew. Our image is that literal? Our.
So who's the our?
Our. Who's the our?
It's a good question. It seems that God's talking to the angels. Our soul is angelic.
Does it talk about angels before?
I think Rashi mentions here that this is the angels.
But I mean, in the actual text, it doesn't really talk.
It doesn't say angels per se. No.
But Rashi just says it.
Yeah, I mean, this comes up again in Shemot a couple times. God refers to speaking to people, help protect the Jewish people, watch over the Jewish people. So there's references to angels, and this seems to be a reference to angels. Because who's the hour?
Right? The hour, yeah. Right.
So angels who are in charge of creating people.
So that doesn't help male or female either.
No, that's not. No, that wouldn't be part of that. Angels are not male or female.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to page 13.
Well, it says God created man, so how could the angels be in charge of creating man?
Angels are God's emissaries. So God says do this, and they do it. Right? There's the angel of birth, there's the angel of death, there's the angel of the son. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's different angels, different jobs. So let us do it together, meaning I'm going to sign for you a job here. Right. Okay, so...
What page?
Page 13. The bottom of the page, we'll do it in English, we'll just pick the Hebrew when we need it. Actually, let's do the Hebrew. The Hebrew is important here, actually. verse Yurchet 18. Vayomar Hashem Elohim lo tov hayot adam levado, ested lo ezer kenegdo. Vayitzar Hashem Elohim min adama, kochet esdev et kol of Hashemayim, vayeve el adam lirot ma yikra lo, vakol ashe yikra lo adam nefesh... Chayahu Shemo, Vikra Adam Shemot, Lakola be Mutal of Hashemayim, Lako Chayat Hasadev, Uldaam, Uladam, Lo Mats Ezer Kinegdo. Vayap Hel Hashem Elohim Tardema, Al Adam, Vayishan, Vaykach Achamit Salota, Vayiskur Basar Tech Tenup, Vayiven Hashem Elohim at the Tzela, Asherakach, Min Adam, Lishavi Veha El Adam. Okay, we'll start with that. That's already a mouthful. Who wants to read verse 18? Someone want to read the English? Okay, Linda?
Hashem, God said, it is not good that man be alone. I will make him a helper, corresponding to him.
Keep going.
Do you want me to go on?
Yeah.
Now Hashem, God had formed out of the ground every beast of the field and every bird of the sky and brought them to the man to see what he would call each one. And whatever man called each living creature, that remained its name. And the man assigned names to all the cattle, and to the birds of the sky, and to every beast of the field. But as for man, he did not find a helper corresponding to him.
Okay, keep going.
So Hashem God cast a deep sleep upon the man, and he slept. And he took one of his sides, and he filled in flesh in its place. Then Hashem God fashioned the side that he had taken from the man into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And the man said, this time it is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This shall be called woman, for from man she was taken. Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh.
Okay. So this is obviously a very important story to discuss. So what happens here? So we have Adam, who seems lonely. Okay. We'll assume for now that Adam is just male. You know, we quote the Midrash that maybe Adam is with male and female. That's another way of reading it, and we could apply that reading into all this as well. But let's go with the simple understanding that Adam is just male for a second, and see where that takes us. Okay, so what happens here? Adam is lonely. Why is Adam lonely?
He doesn't have a helper.
What kind of helper does he want? What's he looking for?
Well, someone like him.
Someone like him, in what sense like him?
In the sense that that no one else fits. Everything else that's been created is not a good fit.
Okay, so I'm sorry?
Flesh and blood, someone who has the same makeup as him.
Okay, so the way he looks, the way he thinks, the way he operates, so he explores the animal world and realizes that, you know, having a dog or a cat is great, but it's not the same thing. So, so Adam decides that he wants to have a partner. Now, did God know in advance this was going to happen?
I would say yes.
Okay. So why doesn't God just start with male and female?
Well, maybe because he wanted Adam to find, to feel the need so that he would appreciate it more.
Okay. Okay.
If you just hand something to someone, then you don't know what it's like not to have that something.
Okay. Good. So, so this is a point raised here by the Ramban, I believe. Let me just double check. Right, so that the Ramban says that the Chizkuni says it simply. He says, "Mitchila alav machshava lasad lo zug." So from the beginning, Hashem's plan was to create female. Right, this wasn't like plan B, right? And another way of reading the text in the beginning, that it said God created Adam, God created male and female, that's one way of reading that text, is that's God's way of telling the reader that the plan from the beginning was male and female, right? When God created Adam, the plan was male and female, because God created every other animal male and female, for the most part, maybe not amoebas, but for the most part, everything's created male and female. That was the plan. It's just that for some reason, Hashem wants humans to be created differently than the rest of the animal world. Hashem doesn't want male and female humans to be created from the beginning. Hashem wants Adam to be created and then to ask for a helper. That was the plan. Okay? And the way it's put here in the Chizkuni is Mitzchil al Mashava la Asad lo Zug velo Matza Petach la Sos ad la Acher Kriyat Tashemot Kadeshita vela vichavene yoter, because Hashem wants Adam to want Eve around. He wants him to ask for her. And every female knows, right? That what do they don't just want the guy, they want him to want her around. That's the idea, right? They want
to. It's easier that way.
They want to test him to make sure that he really is happy and wants to be there. It's all a series of tests that women put on men to see if that's happening, and to evaluate. What
are they saying?
You know better than I do.
He's talking controversial.
What?
I thought this was going to be controversial.
Oh, we haven't got the controversial yet. But part of the interplay of male and female is acknowledgement that they want to have each other around, right? That if she's forced on man, then maybe he will resent, you know, certain aspects of that relationship, right? So if it's something that he asks for, he might get frustrated. But ultimately, it's what he asked for. Okay, and that's in this way, this relationship will always have a bond of that connection. So that's one way of reading this text. That's why Hashem does it that way, is to, because the relationship Hashem is going to want from male and female humans is very different than male and females in the animal world, right? In the animal world, there's not an emotional, psychological connection, right?
Right.
They're not looking for certain traits. They don't have lists of what they're looking for. They're not talking to their friends till 3 in the morning about how come they can't find a guy or a girl that has this, that, and the other thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty functional relationship between male and female in the animal world. It's not very complex, right?
A lot of instinct.
What? A lot of instinct. But it's for the purpose of procreation and, you know, the species carrying on. However, the reason Hashem creates male and female humans different is because it has to be a different form of relationship. The goal is not just to match up and procreate. Obviously, that's a part of the process. But that's not the entirety of the process. And so that's one reason why Hashem does it this way, is to create that sense of longing, to create that desire that he wants, he's asking for her. Okay. So that's one perspective, and that's a pretty prevalent perspective here. Now, the controversial side. So I'll give you the good and I'll give you the bad. I'll start with the bad. The Radak has a very controversial explanation of this story. And he says that why was man created before female? To demonstrate that man is above her. Okay.
What does his wife say?
I don't know. I'm not sure if his wife read his commentary. I don't know what this relationship was.
Okay, well, we don't have to go by him. But
no. I just want to. I'm going to present.
That's okay.
I'm going to present all the perspectives, but to be intellectually honest here.
But she was made out of his side, not out of his head.
Hold it in
to be above the.
So we get into that. That's the important point. But he writes. This is what he writes, just to be as controversial as possible. So why is it that the rest of the animal world was created male and female simultaneously, and humans are created male and female? It's to give honor to the male human. Because in the rest of the animal world, there's no real, you know, maybe a male is stronger than the female in the animal world, but one's not better than the other. But that's not true in the human world, right? That males are better than females. Limshol aleha, to rule over her. Velotzavotota, and to give her demands.
My son-in-law did this.
Yeah, he must have been Sparty, right?
Yeah.
Kasher yirtzeh ki hi echam evarav. Because ultimately, she's one of his limbs. Right? She's an extension of him. So therefore, she listens to him. That's his perspective. It's funny, we'll see a little later, the Radak has explained another story, not nearly as... I don't like the word misogynistic, because I don't think that's a word that's usually properly often. But not as chauvinistic as this one is. So that's one perspective on the story. It's amazing how you can have one story that will have two completely opposite lessons. So that's the Radak's lesson from this story. You look at the Abarbanel, right? And he goes the completely opposite direction. This is what the Abarbanel writes. The Abarbanel is, you know, the 15th century scholar from Spain.
Well, he's Sephardic.
He was Sephardic. He was a real Sephardic. He was actually from Spain.
All right, so I'm
maybe
more
enlightened. He
right, yeah.
Enlightened.
So he writes
the real Sephardic
house. Okay. So here, yeah, the Radak, I think, is also from Spain. I think they're both Sephardic.
Oh, crap.
I don't think it has to do with Sephardic.
I'm teasing. You know that.
So he says, sorry. Here it is, okay. So he says that, why did God take his rib, right? Why not take...
Why a rib?
Why not a fingernail? Why not a toe? Why not hair? I don't know, anything. Right? Why a rib?
I know. Can I just say...
Please.
Because a rib holds you up. If you take out a rib, you're...
Oh.
Maybe you're lopsided or something.
Okay.
Ooh.
Take off an ear, your head's going to fall.
So
this is what he says. Okay.
That he needs the woman to support.
Now, first of all, he quotes Midrash that what is this rib? So Adam walked around his whole life missing a rib? That's not so... That's kind of painful.
Yeah.
So he quotes Midrash that no, this was an extra rib. That this was God's plan from the beginning.
All right.
God put an extra rib in Adam that was intended to be... how he was going to make her. Yeah, so that was the place. This is right. It says, "Vine lo bara ta isha min haraglayim." So God didn't make him from his feet. Shehu achelak hayoter shafal, because that would be lowly, the bottom of him. That's like, you know, that's a lowly part to be created from, like as if he's stepping on her. Kadei shelo tei be'enav kashifcha. He should never look at his wife as being like his maidservant. Velo bara min harosh, but didn't make him from his head either. Kadei shelo tei be'enaha ki giver ta bayit. So they would think that she's the boss who controls him. If it's from his head, it's like she's above him. So it's created from the rib, which is in the middle of the body. So they're equal. Because in the house, they should both be equal. Right? Man and they should both be equal. Neither one should feel above or below the other one. And he says that, in his opinion, his view, that when Adam was created, he was created with an extra rib, which would then be used for Eve. This was part of the original plan. And this wasn't some of the... Okay. Kine yesh davar shu mutar etzal ish haprati fu hachachri kefi hamin kamo alochot hazari shehu mutar kefi ha'ish. So, just as, I have to be honest, we're going to get a little graphic here when it comes to some sexual things that, as they get into. So he says, just as in the, you know, when it comes to sexuality and creation of a person, so it's the same process, right? It's a part of the man that is given to the female to then to create. So he says it's the same process. It's a metaphor for the rib being taken from Adam. A part of him becomes her to create that connection between them. That he should always look at her as an extension of himself. Right?
Is this the Barbara now?
This is the Barbara now. Yeah.
I like him.
Right.
Yeah.
So then she and their children become an extension of him,
right?
Because it is part of him that is used to grow inside of her. So therefore, it strengthens the connection between them, and it's clear that there's that link between them. So that's the way he puts it. So that's why it's kind of a metaphor for the creation of Adam and Eve, and that's why she was created that way, to create that link that he looks at her just as a person looks at. Why do people protect their children more than other people's children? Right, because it's an extension of yourself. It came from you. From you, there's a sense of protection, and we'll get into this a little bit. Also, the concept of a husband protecting his wife, a man protecting, you know, protecting a woman. But that's part of that relationship. As we'll get into, part of the relationship of male and female is the man looking after and protecting his wife. So he'll look at her this way because she's an extension of him. So. It's the same story, and you see the complete opposite extremes of how it's interpreted. This is all from the Middle Ages. So anyway, I wanted to give you both extremes to see the different takes on it. Yes?
Okay, if I understand it correctly, the halakha is that the man is the one that's obligated to marry and have children.
Right.
Okay, so the woman is really doing him a favor. I mean, there's no halakha for women to get married and have children.
Right.
Which I know because I don't have children. I like to be on the right side of Hashem. That always puts him in the place of winning her.
Of needing her.
Yeah, winning her or needing her.
Right.
Because she doesn't have to do it.
Right. Okay, that's true. We'll talk about that as well. Right. I mean, maybe we can get into that a little bit. Okay. So, now this description, there's a very interesting description here. of the relationship between them. So, so it's described in 18 Yerchet, right? We said, what is their relationship going to be? I will make him an Ezer Kenegdo. So Ezer Kenegdo has it's an interesting language. Ezer, from the word Azar, Ozer is to help. And Kenegdo, what does Neged mean?
Against.
Against. Like it's going up against each other. So it's a helpmate that is against him. Okay? What does that mean?
Against as in opposed.
As in like
or against
opposed.
As in very close to.
As in opposed.
Telling him when he's wrong.
Right. So it's this. It's both. So it's a helpmate that is against him. What does that mean? So Rashi gives his explanation. Rashi says, Zacha Ezer lo Zacha Kenegdo lehi lachem. It depends what he merits. If he's a good guy, if he deserves it, she'll be his helpmate. If he isn't a very good guy, she'll be his. You know, they'll be fighting all the time, right? So there's a potential in every relationship to be helpmates for each other or to make each other miserable, right? Every relationship has those possibilities. There's two extremes, right? That are always at play. And it can fluctuate. It can fluctuate wildly, sometimes in short amounts of time, from being the greatest helper to World War III. Right? and Bertie can explain that better, maybe than any of them.
Yeah.
But I saw this in action on Shabbos when I went to the home of a couple where she was from birth, and
you
he
went
was
to where.
To Shabbos lunch at a couple where she was from birth. Oh. And he, I don't even know if he's becoming religious, but he's Jewish. Okay. And he'd do something that would like break Shabbos. And she would say, no, you can't do that today.
Okay. Rashi doesn't define what it takes to merit a good marriage, but, you know, kind of leaves it in the broad sense. It's a great little
Why did
piece.
Hashem do that? To create rift between
husband
and wife.
Otherwise, it's boring. Yeah. You want to know something?
Not
I
something.
Can answer that. It's boring. My God. If you
When Bertie gets bored, she just starts going after Maury.
Really? That's right. You're right.
Read a good
How
book.
Do you think it lasted? What did I tell you? I was going to give him a gift. Wasn't that exciting? For a while.
It was exciting, I have to say.
For your 52nd anniversary?
No, the 50th. The 50th. I told that to Rabbi. I think he freaked out.
I knew you were kidding. Bernie's joke had been, I give you 50 years and that's it. I'm out of here now.
Yeah.
You don't get any more of my time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw this. I can't remember I saw it. Oh my gosh. So, there's a interesting little piece that kind of brings this out. So, in Hebrew, so man is ish, okay? And female is isha.
Right,
okay?
But Hashem and the ish.
Okay, so right. So, well, in both.
Right.
So, so basically, both words have Aleph and Shin together, right? That spells Aish, which is fire. And then the two letters that are extra are Yud and He, which spells out Hashem's name. Okay? So that when the couple, you know, that if they have God in their relationship, then they will be Ish and Isha, and there will be peace and they will kind of coexist. But when you take Hashem out of the equation, or when, you know, when there's when it's no longer, when this relationship is no longer elevated or purposeful, or, you know, where they're trying to do right by each other, then it's just fire, right? So it shows, so even within the names, it shows the possibility of you, Hashem can be in this relationship, and it can be the holiest and most important thing, and the most beautiful thing. And this can be the biggest disaster and cause people's lives to be miserable.
Because there's no Hashem.
Right? And I saw in the comments, it might have been the Abarbanel, I'm not sure, that, you know, why is it have to be one or the other? right? It's Azir Kenegdo. It seems like it's either a helpmate or it's, you know, or it's a disaster. You know, why can't you just have somewhere in between? Ah, it's an okay marriage, happy deal. And so the commentary said that's the way it is. It's hard to, you know, it's usually going well or going poorly. You know, typically that's how relationships go. There's usually why, you know, there's fluctuations. And as I really could, it really is funny, was that if you look at it, when it comes to the man, Hashem's letter is between the Aleph and the Shin, right? Meaning, you don't have the word age unless you take the Yud out. But there's no inherent fire here. With a woman, it's Ayin Shin Hey. You can see the word age within it. Why? Because she's a lot more fiery than he is.
Right.
The fire's always there with her.
Right.
There's just a hey right. at the end that kind of right. funnels it. With a man, there's not the same inherent fire. When you take Hashem out, then the fire, you know, but you know, then it's created, not created, then it really comes out. But there's not the same inherent fire and passion and emotion. So that's why, I thought it's a very cute point, that's why it's structured this way, that for the female, the fire is always there, it's just a question of where it's going to be directed. But for a man, the fire is not necessarily there to the same extent, it almost has to come out. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I like that.
I like that too. That makes a lot of sense.
Look how nervous he is.
What? Oh, come on, look at me here. I'm like, you know, this is
the
line then.
All these Aishas.
What?
You're in the room with all the
with all the Aishas. I've got to, you know. Exactly. I know, be careful. Right?
And we're not right. Mishka women.
Right, even little Eliana, she's got an opinion on this, right? She's just learning. Okay. Anything else in this that I want to focus on, or should we go to the next story?
I feel very fiery sometimes. Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. It's very healthy.
That's men's biggest fear is female getting emotional. That is when men don't know what to do themselves.
ESPN makes me.
for you it's sports.
Yes, you put it on for a minute and I'm already. It's up.
That gets the fire going. Okay. So let's get to the next story, because this is just as interesting, if not more so. So now let's get to after the sin. So the snake convinces Eve to eat from the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. Eitz hadat tov v'ra. And they are punished. And their punishments are very interesting. Now first, what does Adam do when he's caught red-handed? What's the first thing he does?
Blames his wife.
He blames his wife. Right? But look how he blames his wife. It's very interesting. Go to Pasuk Yud Bet 12 on page 16-17.
Blame God.
Well, yeah. But he blames both. Right?
You gave me
right. Vayomar Adam ha'isha shenatata imadi hina nali mina yitavachal. Right? And the man said, the woman that you gave to me, right, she gave me of the tree and I ate it, right? So he's blaming Hashem, right? He's blaming Hashem for giving him this woman who's just causing trouble. So the Ramban is interesting here. Because the Ramban says, what is his argument? His argument was, hey, look, Hashem, you gave me this woman, right? And you gave it to me to be my helper, right? So I figured anything she was going to do must have been for my benefit, right? How could she do anything to harm me? You gave her to me to be a helpmate. How could she possibly do anything to harm me? It didn't even occur to me that this was from the tree that we shouldn't have eaten from, right? That's his argument to Hashem. It's a very interesting argument, right?
Nothing has changed, Rabbi.
What hasn't changed?
Nothing. The blaming.
The blaming. Yeah.
Because she just got a bunch of shots.
And then asking Hashem, because Hashem is there, right?
What?
You know, why did you this, they do say this inside, they're not going to let you know.
What? Why did they?
Yeah.
She got her immunization shots again this morning.
Oh, those are fun. Those are fun.
It was just...
Okay, yeah, it's...
I just blame the nurse. I'm all, that bad nurse. She doesn't have to live with us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She'll be okay. She'll be fine.
Okay.
Great.
So that's just a little side note, but I really want to focus on the punishments. The punishments are very interesting. And the woman and Eve's punishment is all of femininity.
So
what?
He got made smaller, and she had pain in childbirth.
Yeah.
How's that fair?
Oh, how is it fair? He didn't get out scot-free here. He didn't get out scot-free.
You're the only man in the room. I'm blaming you.
What? You're blaming me? He didn't get out scot-free. He's got to work pretty hard. He's got to deal with a lot of garbage.
Where?
Okay, so let's go to... Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go to page 19. Okay. Bomb 17.
Oh.
So what is the snake gets its sentence punishment. We won't worry about the snake for now. When I do my snake class next week, we'll talk about the snake's punishment. So Ted Zion, 16. Eliyasha asher harbeh itzvonech veheronech be'etzev tel dibanim. Okay, this is loaded. To the woman he said, I will greatly increase your suffering and your childbearing. In pain shall you bear children. And there's two pains. There's the pain of childbearing, and there's the pain of really raising children.
Right.
Right? There's two separate pains.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Itzvonech, veronech, be'etzev tel dibanim. So there's two separate things going on there. Ve'el yishech shukatech v'hu yimshal bach. Yeah, your craving shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you.
That I don't understand.
So let's get into that. That's what we have to understand. What?
I understand that because I looked for so long before finding Richard, and it's like I literally craved having a husband.
Okay, so good. We'll get to that. Okay, good. So what is this referring to, this craving? So the pain in childbirth, we can understand that, you know, we understand what that is.
But that makes us better, stronger people.
It does. Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny because the Talmud says that with the punishments came a blessing as well.
Right. I mean, because basically, I think women can withstand pain much
right.
better.
But it's interesting that Talmud says, so like, for example, the curse of the snake was that he'll be lowly, but the benefit that came with that is that it's easy for him to find his food because it slithers and it's easy to sneak up on things. So for females, what was the pain, the benefit? So the Talmud says the benefit that women get is that men will constantly chase after her, which is the very interesting
That's
play.
A benefit.
Well, it shows a bit of, you know, when it comes to female psychology, the concept of being chased after or a desire to be chased after by men, you know, is an interesting. So we're going to get into that's an important piece of this, because what ends up happening is this: the relationship of male being the pursuer and the female being the pursued is a big part of what this curse is. That's what a lot of commentators say. That's what this is.
Man chases a woman till she catches him.
Until she catches him. Right. Yeah. Right. So the curse is that she's dependent on someone chasing her. The benefit is that she gets to be chased, and that's a much more advantageous position to be the chaser, right? Because then she's the object of the affection,
chasee.
Not chasee, right?
She's the chasee.
Chasee. Right. All right, as opposed to being the chaser, the aggressor. So what does this mean? So Rashi gives an explanation, very interesting explanation. So Rashi says, what does it mean that she longs for him? What was the art scroll? Your craving shall be for your husband. So what is that? What is this craving? So Rashi says it is sexual. So, v'al ishech tishukateich. So Rashi says the explanation is that she will desire a man, but she won't be able to do much about it. Meaning, since she is the one who is pursued, she has to wait for it. And that's, so both in a sexual sense, we'll see, but also in an emotional sense, that is part of the curse. That she is dependent on someone pursuing her, and she is limited in how aggressive she can be. Right? Both because of her internal sense of herself, of what is appropriate and what and how things should play out, and just and, you know, in society as a whole, kind of how it's projected. So that is seen as part of the curse, in that she is dependent on his pursuit. Okay, and even when it comes to sexuality, there'll be a certain inherent modesty for women that even if they do desire something, they might have a hard time saying it, or might be embarrassed to say it, or might feel it's inappropriate to talk about it. Right? There's more of inherent modesty when it comes to women, and so she will depend on him being the proactive one, and that puts her in a certain amount of puts her in a tough position at times in many different ways. So that is Rashi's explanation of what this is about. The Ramban puts it a little differently. He doesn't think this is talking about sexuality because he thinks it's a benefit, meaning it speaks highly of women that they're more modest than men, that they're more reserved than men. So why would that be a curse? So he says, "V'nachon be'ini shehanish ota shenichsef me'od al bala v'lo tichosh tzar harion ve'leida v'hu yachzik b'keshivcha v'ene minag liyot ha'eved mishu." Okay. So part of this is that she's dependent on him, right? That if she's going to have children and she's going to be at home, she's dependent on him financially. And that puts her in a risky situation, right? Especially for most of human history, that's very often what's put women in the toughest binds. And even today, I mean, it's a very difficult situation. If a woman has children and she's in a bad marriage, it's a really tough spot. It's a really tough spot for women. So that's part of this curse, is that she's more at risk of being treated badly because she's in this tough spot, right? It puts her in a much more vulnerable position. So that's kind of the way that the Ramban looks at it. The Radak, who before we said was had the very seemingly chauvinistic perspective that he rules over her. So what does he say here? So he says, So he says here, number one, what does it mean she desires him? So it's connected to the previous one. First it says that she's going to have pain in childbirth and pain in child rearing. So you would think, logically, she'd say, okay, I'm out of here, right? I don't want this, right? You're sleeping in that room, I'm sleeping in this room. That's it. No more of this nonsense, right? And yet, even though she will have pain because of it, she still wants it. Both sexually and in having children. So there's this kind of difficulty where she wants something so bad that's going to be very difficult and painful. And that's the curse. And that's one way of looking at the curse.
Or that's
So three different perspectives here as to what this is. And part of it, some people say, is just as Tanya is referring to, is more existential. Is this, and the way that Talmud puts it is that, women are more scared to be alone than men are scared to be alone, right? And so they're more susceptible to getting into bad relationships, to staying in bad relationships, because of a fear of being alone. And that fear of being alone also is a weakness in a sense, because it could lead to making bad decisions or to staying in bad situations because of that. So that, again, this refers to vulnerability that women have as part of their nature, part of their desire, part of kind of the way their lives are set up. And that's seen as the curse, right? That he's got certain responsibility. His curse is that he's got to provide, he's got to work hard, and he's got to kill himself to make ends meet. And her curse is that, but she's often left in very vulnerable situations that require him to be the good guy, and that's, she can't always control that. Yeah.
I don't know. I was just thinking that it occurred to me, your craving shall be for your husband. It's only changing a little bit now, but historically women have been more monogamous than men.
Right. That's true.
So it may just be saying, you know, basically you're just going to want him.
That also seems part of it, that women are also more susceptible to husbands who stray or husbands who... They're less, you know, they're more likely to put up with,
crap
from their husbands. Yeah, seriously. Because of a desire to stay in the relationship, desire to be in a relationship. So that also makes them more susceptible, more vulnerable, because, you know, their desire to be in the relationship, and to desire that. It might be physically, it might be emotionally, maybe psychologically, but that, if you call it a need for a woman to be, you know, with someone involved, puts her also, even in the relationship, in a more vulnerable spot, right?
I think that's a more positive way. Actually, I think that's a more positive way to look at it, rather than women having a fear of being alone, but rather there's a desire, a positive, powerful desire for relationship.
Right. Well, they're intertwined, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, and we'll seek out relationships.
Right.
Just seek out relationships far more than men do anyway, I think.
Yeah,
men
for sure.
Are usually in a sorry state if they happen to become a widower, because they put everything on their wife and they don't have friends.
Right, well, that's what, if you saw earlier, when Adam was created, it said he will leave his mother and father and cling to his wife. Now, Adam doesn't have a mother and father. Right?
Future
right?
Men.
So it's talking about future men. And that's why Adam and Eve represent male and female as a gender as a whole. And right, and that reflects it, is that ultimately, for marriage to work, the male has to leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, and then she'll take it from here. Many a mother-in-law have not liked that setup. and that becomes a source of tension.
You know, like a lot of customs that the woman will go and live with the men's family, like, you know, years ago or whatever, you know.
Was that the case? I don't know. Was that the custom?
Was that a Jewish custom?
I don't know. I'm not sure it's
Maybe
sure
not.
Of that.
That was
no.
A Chinese custom. I mean, you know, in a lot of cultures, the woman would leave her parents' house, and now she's owned by the husband's family.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, there were concepts of impoverished families having their daughters kind of live with a wealthier family and then ultimately marry one of the sons, and she kind of served as like a house worker, you know, at a younger age.
But is that a Jewish concept?
So that concept existed. It wasn't something someone was obligated to do. I mean, that existed in America, you know, within the last 100 years. So that was seen as, if a family wanted to go that route, and a way for them to give their daughter a better life. And that kind of was like an arranged situation. So that did exist. And then she kind of became enveloped as part of his family and was somewhat distanced from her family.
It's in the Torah.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposedly selling your daughter to...
Yeah, selling her, right? You're yeah, there's that
the
sort of arrangement.
The understanding is
right.
That you're going to marry the son, you're going to marry the...
But then also when you get married, you take your husband's customs.
You take his customs, but okay. That's true. No, the public face is more definitely the husband. But if you think about it this way, what's the perception? A woman who calls her mother every day, what's that perception?
Sort of normal.
Yeah, that's normal, right? A
recipe.
The husband who calls his mother every day, what's the perception?
Mommy's boy.
Right, mommy's boy, right? Well, what's the difference? Why? They're both doing the same exact thing, right? The expectation is he has to leave his parents and cling to his wife.
Yeah, I did this project at school about comparing different relationships where people in the Tanakh mentioned their father or if it didn't mention their father and their relationships to women. And it's really interesting. You know?
And so what's an example? Like,
King David. It doesn't really mention
his mother at all.
Mother so much, yeah.
Right.
You could see his relationships with women. So.
I mean, the strength of the relationship with their mother was going to reflect the relationship with their wife.
Yeah, either that or the lack of mentioning of a father.
That's very good. Ilana. Very good.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yaakov was closer to his mother, Esav to his father.
They say,
now, what does that mean? Interesting.
When you want a relationship with a guy, and I remember my mother saying this to me, the relationship he has with his mother is going to be the results of how he's going to be as a husband, which is good. And she loved Moish. She loved Maury.
Yeah, but
wait a second, because Maury's relationship with his mother was A1 tops. And so, you know, and I used to say, you love him so much, you marry him.
But that's the flip side. But if it's too close, then it's mama's boy.
But no, but this was the Derek Harris. You know, he worked in Oakland, and we lived in San Francisco. He would stop by first at his mother's. You know, he worked at Simon's Hardware, and he'd stop by at the mother's to say hi to everybody, make sure everything is fine, and then on the way, you know, get on the bridge. I mean, and if it wasn't for my mother telling me that, I think I wouldn't have been a happy wife. But I think, and I told her, so what I did was do the same thing to my daughter. You're Ilana? Okay.
But you don't want, like, oh, my mum used to iron it like that.
Oh, no.
When my mum made this, it used to taste better.
Well, the only thing is, wait a minute. The food, you do have to sort of bend a little bit with that. Because he loved Hungarian goulash. I'll never make Hungarian goulash the way the mum Never. Do you make the way your mother? No way.
I make it better.
No. You're a professional chef.
I know.
No, you have additional advantage.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. Yeah, Mary?
I'm just saying that, I think, like, Jerry doesn't understand how I used to talk to my mother. 4 times a day. I mean, really didn't understand it whatsoever.
Yeah, then I said, that I talked to you so much.
And then he doesn't understand why I talk to Alana in Israel twice a day, even though she's in Israel. You know, he doesn't understand that. And so I said, well, Susan, your sister talks to your mother a couple times a day, too. Just doesn't understand the concept of connecting mothers and daughters.
I think that's just women in general.
Yeah, right.
Like, we just like to talk more.
And then I think it's wonderful when he calls his mother. I always say, I don't have to tell. He's good calling his mother.
All right, but so he's that's
very
good. Good.
He's a good...
No, they don't understand.
They don't understand. They just don't understand.
They don't understand relationships.
So, one more point that I'm
saying. Do you talk to your mother? How often do you talk to your mother?
2-3 times a week.
And how often does Bethany call her mother?
It's not the same. They don't speak every day. It's not like that. No, it's not like that. It's about the same.
Well, Bethany's sort of busy.
Yeah, but even so, yeah, no, she's very busy. But her mom also, it's not that kind of relationship. My mom talks to my youngest sister like 10 times a day. The other sisters maybe once a day. She goes like 10 times a day. But she was the baby. She was home for like 5 years by herself, and they were like, you know.
Yeah, but you have an excellent relationship with your mother. I've seen
I have a relationship with my mother.
And that's why you and Bethany
have a good relationship.
Yes.
So,
Bethany was smart enough to say yes.
So one more point here is that...
Let's get off the...
And I had to pursue Bethany. Believe me, that wasn't easy.
See,
that's another class.
She must have appreciated it.
Yeah, that was not easy.
You got a good one.
So... one other way of looking at this is, and maybe kind of extending this, something I think about sometimes, is that a frustration that women desire him, but he rules over. So what does that mean? So one way of looking at it, I think, is that she desires a relationship, like you were talking about, with him that he doesn't necessarily understand or want for him, and want himself, right? That women are always desiring a certain closeness with their husband.
What are you feeling?
And husbands have a tendency to pull back at times or create distance between them. And that's a source of frustration for women all over the world. That she desires something that he doesn't desire quite the same way. And that's a certain amount of pain for her, is that she's always trying to connect, and he connects, and then there's like a stop, you know? So I think that's another way of looking at this also. I think is that interesting, that that's part of the curse, is that she's constantly seeking something that might not ever be possible, because he doesn't think the same way. He doesn't desire the same thing. His needs in the relationship are not quite the same as hers, and so it's a frustration for her in that sense. So I think that's an interesting take on this also.
When I had my colour lessons, my teacher said to me, you know, if your husband says to you, what are you thinking? You'll go, well, I was thinking about da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you can go on and on. Like, but don't bother to ask your husband what he's thinking, because he probably isn't thinking anything.
Right. Well, women get the most trouble when they interpret what a man is thinking, why he did something, what the motivations were, what it meant. That's how they get themselves into a, they work themselves up into quite a lather about these things.
This may be somewhat off topic, but a friend of mine was saying she read some research where they studied the activity of male brains and female brains in human beings, and they really operate very differently.
Right. No.
And if
sure.
you didn't know better, you'd say there were two.
What I tell couples now, I think there's a lot of pressure on marriages that's unfair. I think the expectations people have going into marriage now. When I hear a couple say, you know, he's not only my wife, my husband, they're also my best friend, right? You hear that a lot. And I always say, get a best friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
If he's your best friend, it's not going to be good for anybody. If she's your, you know, you have to have a girlfriend that you can talk to. If you expect your husband to be your sounding board and all these things, it's not good for, believe it or not, it's not good for the marriage. It's because he's not going to be able to play that role that you want from him. And he doesn't, it's not in his skill set.
You need somebody to talk about your problems with your spouse.
I wouldn't do that. That's a little dangerous to get too personal with somebody else about, you know, your relationship. That I wouldn't do necessarily. But I think you need to have a best friend. You know, but there's this pressure today that your spouse has to be your best friend. It's a different relationship. It doesn't have to be. It's a very the movies. All these movies with, you know, yeah, all these movies and that's a Hollywood invention. That's very, but it really gets to people, and then they get very frustrated that, you know, they're not my best friend and we don't do everything together, and you know, that's not the way life is. There has to be different types of relationships, and you can't have one relationship fill every need you have in life. It's not realistic. It's not fair to the person. So, anyway. Okay, so that's class number one.
Wow, that